For SearchSecurity.com, I'm Rob Westervelt. You're listening to Security Wire Weekly for April 25th, 2007. In this edition, we'll talk to Stephen Adler of IBM's Data Governance Council about identity theft and data breaches. Also, a look at the week's news, including lawmakers voicing concern over a State Department data breach in 2006, Apple releasing fixes and 25 flaws on Mac OS X, and the Chief Information Security Officer of First Data seeking changes to the PCI DSS rules. We'll be back after this brief message.
Want to know which NAC products can lock down your network endpoints or which firewalls can secure the application layer? Visit our brand new integration of networking and security school. Using a combination of webcasts, technical tips, podcasts, and quizzes, a top-notch roster of renowned information security instructors will help you learn how to secure the application layer, lock down network endpoints, secure remote offices, and much more. Don't wait. Get an in-depth look at the security-related and networking-related processes affecting enterprise network security. Visit SearchSecurity.com's Integration of Networking and Security School today at SearchSecurity.com/NetSec. That's SearchSecurity.com/NetSec.
Apple recently released a fix to patch 25 flaws for Mac OS X. The holes include an error in the AFP client, a buffer overflow error in the airport driver module, and an integer overflow error in the RPC library, among others. Some of the flaws can be exploited to conduct a denial-of-service attack. Others can be exploited to disclose sensitive data and run malicious code on targeted machines. Next, we're going to talk with Stephen Adler. He is the head of IBM's Data Governance Council, and he is also a program director of data governance solutions at IBM. Stephen tells us what the council is all about and about some of the results of the council's work. And he also has a unique take on how companies should respond to all of the data breaches that have been so public in the news in recent months.
The council was actually formed in November 2004.
Oh, okay.
And it was formed because a lot of organizations recognize that data is one of the most valuable assets that companies have. Companies increasingly are looking at how you manage that information, how you make it free. You know, lots of IT departments want to find ways of getting more information out to more individuals, so standardizing the way they write information, whether it's structured data or unstructured data or audio or video, you know, like our podcast right now. Everybody wants to get ideas out into the marketplace, mm-hmm. but people recognize that when you aggregate that information, when you combine it from lots of different stovepiped databases across the organization that used to be protected by the nature of the proprietary database format that it was used or the lack of standards and aggregation. When you aggregate that information, you're now creating something that's new and rich and valuable. It's not just valuable to you. Mm-hmm. It's valuable to lots of other people that you don't want to get access to. And it also creates not just lots of new complicated social responsibilities about how an organization governs the effective and appropriate use of that data.
Are these mostly vendor partners? Or?
They're actually 35 companies,
okay.
12 vendor partners, 3 universities.
Oh, okay.
Very diverse group. Mm-hmm. Lots of them are very large banks, credit card companies, telecommunications organizations, retailers, some public sector governments.
Just to get a better understanding of the whole goal of the group, is it more about filling, does IBM use it to fill white spaces in its product portfolio? Is it more about developing standards? Is it more about interoperability between vendor partners and IBM?
in the beginning was just to understand the space.
Okay.
Our customers were coming to us and saying, we've got a complex new field here. We see regulatory compliance, we see security issues, we see data privacy and data protection issues, we see data quality issues, we see data management. We've got all these different stovepipes in the organization. They're not talking to each other, but we recognize that there is this new space that combines all these different disciplines where data is an enterprise asset. Everybody has to be involved in figuring out how to leverage it to its potential and yet protect it.
Mm-hmm.
So let's work together with IBM to figure out what the dimension of that solution looks like. That was the first beginning. And that's why the council has been working on developing a data governance maturity model to help identify which stakeholders should be involved, which disciplines are involved in governing data, or governing people who use data, and how would you benchmark the different types of practices as indicative of different levels of maturity.
What's the status of that? I mean, it's been 2.5, we're going to be going on 3 years at the end of this year.
We started working on the maturity model last year.
It must be difficult to do. I mean, from 2004 to now, a lot of things have changed. Everything from maybe Sarbanes-Oxley started driving data governance decisions
mm-hmm.
when the group started forming, but now maybe companies are a little bit beyond Sarbanes-Oxley at this mm-hmm. point and investing in other areas for regulatory compliance.
You know, there are so many triggers for data governance.
Yeah.
Regulatory compliance is one of them, but you know, data quality is another. Maximizing the use of your information assets. Metadata is becoming an increasing challenge. So, yeah, the landscape has changed in the last 3 years, but the pressure on organizations to govern their use of data more effectively has only grown. And organizations today more than ever recognize that, you know, siloed approach to data management or security or privacy protection simply isn't going to cut it. There's just way too much information out there. Companies are collecting more and more and more, generating more and more and more. And governing its use effectively requires a real team approach. So, yeah, a lot of things have changed in the last 3 years, but the demand for this area continues to increase.
Mm-hmm.
And so the council started working on this maturity model last year. It's a very big model. It's 11 categories, 5 levels of maturity for each category, lots of content in each area. I've got between members in the council and IBM, there are probably close to 70 people working on this maturity model. When we felt like we had a stable and standardized model, we decided that it would be appropriate now to start sharing it with the rest of the world. So the first thing we did was take the lessons we learned from working with the council, developing the model, and we transformed it into a formal assessment offering, which we announced on December 13th. It was the first kind of work product that was delivered from this council. Now other organizations who want to take advantage of this work can come to IBM, to Global Services, and get a data governance assessment. That's the first step. The second step will come later this year as we start rolling out some white papers and descriptions of the rest of the maturity model, which we hope to publish and share with others and get some feedback in the marketplace.
It seems to me that measuring risk is unique to each individual company.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to build this model, obviously, around risk. Risk is part of that model. What are some similarities, then, between enterprises in measuring risk? And where should a company begin if they're going to...
Measuring risk is really easy if you know what you're doing. Risk gets monetized when you have a loss. Most companies don't accurately record their losses, and they don't link them to causality or to external events. And without those kinds of links, most organizations don't really recognize the rich treasure of history they have in their own data about the past, which allow them to better forecast future events and future types of risks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really easy if you think about it like insurance. You know, if you're going to get insured, say for driving a car, what are you going to tell them? You know, you'll fill out an insurance form, and you're going to tell them what kind of a car you have, which they care about, what year, what model, what make. But more than that, you're going to tell them about your driver history. How many tickets have you had? How many accidents have you had in the past? What kinds of policies have you had? And they use that information to profile you in a risk category. That is, they're analyzing the past, They're considering the present, and in some sense, they use it to forecast the future. And that's what companies need to start doing, because in every organization, they're incurring first-party losses. Not everything is reported publicly. Increasingly, with data disclosure bills, it is. But really, every company today, in some form or another, is either having hack attacks, or they're suffering damage from viruses, or from worms, or from phishing, or farming, or from insider abuses, or from lost data tapes, or lost laptops, or lost USB keys. I mean, it's so prevalent. Every organization, whether it's reported publicly or not, is suffering some kind of data loss today. Record them. Journal those losses. Link them to real financial damages. Every time you get a loss, write in a database. Figure out, okay, what was my loss? What was the cause of the loss? How much did we incur? And did we actually have to report the loss publicly? Were we in one of the, what is it now, 29 states or 24 states that have data disclosure laws like California SB 1386? If you had one of those laws, you had to report it publicly. Then you start taking the, you know, keeping track if any of those disclosures result in a lawsuit. If it results in a lawsuit, track what that costs you. Over time, you'll start to build a repository of what my first-party losses were. That is, what were the losses that I incurred personally? Was it downtime? Was it loss of a server? Was it data recovery costs? Was it forensic investigation? Did I have any third-party losses? Did it cause any harm to others? Did somebody suffer identity theft because of the data that was lost? Did anybody sue us, et cetera?
Do you really want all this stuff documented, though, if you're an enterprise?
If you want to predict the future, if you want to begin forecasting future losses, you have to keep a record of your past events. It's the only way you can monetize potential future losses. So in the future, as you start to see rising trends of, say, anomalous behavior in data access control, or crime trends in your region regarding lost tapes or laptop thefts from cars, you can begin to compare that to past losses from similar trends and forecast. Over years, your loss database will become such an incredibly rich asset to the organization that it'll be your real market differentiator in terms of risk management.
Do you think that companies maybe are saving too much data? They haven't discovered which data is more valuable to keep, and they've...
Well, that, of course, becomes a retention issue, right? That's right. Another area of data governance, that is my information lifecycle management, and how long should I retain my data? And that's becoming a growing concern for many companies. Am I saving too much data? How do I know what I should save? A lot of organizations back up everything, and, of course, they don't know really from their backups how long do they have to save it regulatorily, how long do I have to keep it, what data should I delete? This is becoming a growing area of concern, too.
And is that why we're seeing more data breaches, in your opinion?
I think we're seeing more data breaches because we have more data.
Okay.
And I think because our entire economy is changing today. Somewhere between 30 and 48 million Americans, for example, work at home. Large portions of the population, of the employed population, travel a great deal. And when they travel around the world, they carry BlackBerries and cell phones and PDAs and laptops that contain hundreds of gigabytes of data. This is only going to increase. You know, we're going to start seeing portable drives with terabytes on them. And that proliferation of data, of course, creates increased exposures, increased opportunities for loss. And it only increases the obligation of an organization to figure out how to control those losses and mitigate them. That's why I keep saying it's really important to have a repository of things that have occurred in the past, because anything that you've had happen in the past, guaranteed, is going to happen five times worse in the future, because you're going to have five times more data, five times more opportunity for its loss. And you've got to be in a position where you can analyze past behavior, consider present circumstances, and forecast future losses and prevent them.
IBM launched or announced its privacy management council in 2001. What has come of it, and is it still active?
It's not active anymore. It was a leadership group of chief privacy officers. There were about 30 organizations that participated. And a lot of the lessons that we learned in the Data Privacy Council formed the basis for the Data Governance Council. That is, a lot of the issues that our customers were looking at around protecting personal information, developing data handling policies, embedding those policies into business processes, and managing, you know, protecting the data of their customers. Well, a lot of our customers said, you know, we want to do that not only for personal information, but for all data types. We want to do that for financial information, for trade secrets, for patents, for email, for same time, for instant messaging communication. We have lots of data types, and we need data handling practices and policies for all of them, because we're being faced today by huge amounts of regulatory requirements that are not just in the privacy domain. Mm-hmm. We're being challenged by security challenges that are not just around personal information protection. We're being challenged by data quality issues because our data decays at a rate of 5% a month, and we can't trust our data any longer. We have data architecture issues that are related to privacy, but also to a broader context. We are trying to compete in a global environment, and we have global regulatory concerns that are changing every day. So what we saw by working together with firms in the data privacy arena was that it pointed to a set of larger issues that organizations were facing, and that's why we formed the Data Governance Council.
Also in the news, federal lawmakers charged with overseeing Homeland Security voiced alarm Thursday at the continued vulnerability of federal computers to attack by foreign parties. Recent hacks into government networks that maintain sensitive information have generated a growing recognition that current federal mandates are inadequate to prompt improved security. Of particular concern is the latest attack on government computers to be disclosed officially. An infiltration of the Department of State's networks in Washington and East Asia last summer. In May of 2006, a department employee opened a malicious email that contained an attachment that installed a Trojan horse. Now, Microsoft Corporation couldn't deploy a patch quickly. The State Department implemented a temporary security fix for the vulnerability. Microsoft released the patch in August. Details about the State Department's data security breach took place during a congressional subcommittee meeting last week, which sought answers about the attacks. And finally this week, Phil Mellinger, the Chief Information Security Officer of First Data Corporation, turned some heads at a recent PCI DSS conference when he said that he'd rather see the bar set lower for companies to comply with the PCI DSS standards and then have it raised once more merchants have complied. Now, deadlines have been set for merchants to prove compliance by the end of the year, but so far industry estimates show that more than 60% of merchants fail to meet the current standards. Now, 90% of merchants, according to the PCI DSS Standards Council, are in the process of becoming compliant. And Mellinger is calling for a PCI DSS status directory in which compliant merchants and processors are publicly listed. Visa, MasterCard, Discover, American Express, and JCB have come together to push merchants and processors to meet the standards. The goal is to police the payment card industry before legislators enact regulations to address data security issues. Well, that ends this edition of Security Wire Weekly. Be sure to check out our recent podcasts at our podcast page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. And as always, you can get the latest news and information at our news page at searchsecurity.com/news. For now, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.